I have been out of school for a long time, so the fact that this time of year still feels like back-to-school season is very weird, but late August, early September will always be like the Sunday night of the year. It's eagerness tinged with impending doom. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today's show on KCUR Central Standard is going to take us all back to school. We are joined today, later in the show, by the Bibliophiles. They'll recommend great works of literature set in classrooms and on playgrounds and in the school lunchrooms and all of those places. But first, books in school, as in school libraries. Jan Bombeck is a retired librarian here to share some thoughts about how school libraries are changing. Hi, Jan.
Hi.
So you used to work for the Shawnee Mission Schools and the public library in Johnson County at the same time, right?
That's correct.
How many years did you work as a school librarian?
26.
26. How would you describe the role of a library in the ecosystem of a school?
Well, I feel like the librarian should be the center of the school, the place that teachers can come for information on units that they're doing with their children, where the librarian can do research to help them better do those units and present them to the kids. It's also the place that children can come to hear good stories and read and check out books. And also, the librarian is a good person to guide them in their research as well.
What made you want to be a school librarian?
Well, basically, I love to read. That was kind of the starting point. When my children went back to school, I began to help in their school library. And when the librarian there realized I had a degree in elementary education, she said, well, you should go back to school and be a librarian. And I thought that would be great.
What are some of your favorite moments looking back, especially in the earlier years of your career working in a school library? Anything that sticks with you as sort of exemplifying the role that a librarian can fill and that a library can fill when it comes especially, I think, to reading outside the syllabus?
Well, one of my favorite moments was a young lady that came in one day who loved to read, and she just stood there and looked around the library, and she said, what a life, surrounded by books.
How old was this girl?
She was about fourth grade, I think.
And I what just, a life.
Surrounded by books, and I thought, I agree. Another favorite moment that I always tell about and remember was several years ago, I read a book to a group of fifth graders, and the title of the book was Harvesting Hope, The Story of Cesar Chavez. And after I read the book to the kids, they clapped, and I didn't have very many clapping.
Not a lot of ovations.
And this one little boy, his eyes just lit up, and he said, that is the best story I have ever heard.
Aw. My memories of the school librarian involve, like, she sat on a rocking chair and we were all on a rug in front of her.
Did you do that? I had that.
Yeah.
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
I needed to set the scene in my
mind.
I remember the school library also as being the first place I went to do research on school reports. Did you get a lot of students working through that process of learning how to search for answers to questions?
Yes. And that was a big part of my focus in being a librarian was to help them learn how to do that. And especially as my career went on and we were dealing with internet and online sources to help the kids evaluate if they were looking at a good source, evaluating websites. And the district purchased databases that the children could use. And those were always valuable because they had kind of already been screened. And it was a good place to start teaching them how to do research. And we had some...
When you say they've already been screened for appropriateness?
Appropriateness, yes.
Okay.
They had some databases the district purchased. And then we could use those to get the kids on as young as second grade sometimes to help them learn how to do research, like if they were going to do a report on animals or something.
It's funny because as I imagine being in that fourth and fifth grade age range now, For adults, if you're wondering about something, there is just this automatic, it's almost like your fingertips start just Googling.
Google it.
Yeah. And Yeah, you don't have to stand up, let alone leave your house or, you know, and I assume the same is true for kids by that age. Am I assuming wrong?
That is true, yes. And I always tried to point out the pitfalls of that. I had a great lesson that was a website on explorers. And it was beautifully done and had pictures of all the explorers, but it had been set up as kind of a joke. And as you got into it, it had just all these crazy facts that were just hysterical, like that the Louisiana Purchase was listed on Craigslist and, you know, and things like, and, but it, you know, to look at it, it looked like just a perfectly decent website. And there were several.
It takes that adult who has already learned about the Louisiana Purchase.
Exactly.
To know that that's just not possible.
Right, right. And so there were lots of ways to help kids realize if they were going down the wrong track as far as research.
So that brings me to how you saw libraries change in schools over the decades.
The most change that I saw was lack of money, lack of resources. When I first started, we had quite a bit of help from the district as far as cataloging books and...
Can you explain what that is for people who have not worked in libraries?
Well,
I have had the joy of cataloging, but I was surprised by what it entails.
It's very tedious and boring, although some people love it.
I loved it.
I know. Some people loved it, which thankfully there were those people, and I was very sorry when the district got rid of them. When you purchase a book, you need for it to be put into your database or, you know, eons ago on a card in the card catalog. And you also need...
It's like the birth certificate when the books arrive at the library.
Right, that's right. And they also need to have a spine label on them, which is the little thing on the spine that shows where they live on the shelf. And they need to have, recently, a barcode on them so that they could be scanned and checked out to the kids. And so that's very time-consuming to do all that, to enter it in the database, to put a spine label on it.
Yeah, you're writing what keywords should be searched. You're doing
yes,
all that.
Yes, you could access that online, but you didn't have to catalog from scratch. But that was all the tedious backstory, what happens before the book gets on the shelf. And we had people in the district that did that for us. So when the books arrived, all we had to do was tell the children about them and put them on the shelf.
So it's changed the work of the school librarians to not have those resources.
Oh, yes, totally. Yeah.
What is your sense of where libraries and schools are headed now? You said that earlier when I asked you what is the role of a school library in the school ecosystem, you said, well, ideally it is. And I wonder if that is in contrast to reality, that you said ideally it's very central.
I think in some schools it is still. I think some people have the mistaken opinion that the internet or computers or Googling can take the place of a librarian. And I feel like that is totally going down the wrong track, because I think more so than ever, children need some kind of guidance in what is out there, because there is so much stuff out there. And you can't just say to a child, well, let's just Google it. I mean, they come up with all kinds of crazy things.
Yes.
And to have an adult there to guide them is important. The other wrong track that I feel like, at least in the district that I was in, they went down the makerspace track, which to me derailed the importance or the time that I got to spend doing what I felt like was an important part of my job.
So can you explain what that means, the makerspace road that...
Makerspace, and I don't know if people are familiar with that, but it's a type of, I don't know, like experimental, techie,
hands-on building,
engineering, that type of thing, which I feel like is great for the kids to have. I just don't, I feel like it's a something that's in schools that can definitely go hand in hand with the librarian.
But maybe just not instead of?
Yes. And as a librarian, you only have so many hours in the day. And if the administration is asking you to spend part of that doing makerspace activities, that takes away from the time that you can teach research skills. And what I feel like is a super important part is just the literature.
Do you think that the pressures acting on school libraries are more political, cultural, technological?
I kind of think it's money. I think possibly if the district had the money to hire someone to do makerspace separate from the library, that might have happened. But the makerspace was the big new thing, and we have to squeeze it in someplace, and let me see, where can we put it? Oh, let's give it to the librarian. And so I, you know, got stuck with it, and then just gives you one more ball to balance.
We're about to talk about great works of literature set in school with our book critics, who we call the bibliophiles. Do you have a favorite book set in school where the main character is a teacher or student or perhaps even a librarian?
Well, I was asked to think about this in the, you know, before I came on. And, you know, I'm sure if I had more time to think, I could come up with more. But the one book that I came up with that the kids really liked is an author named Andrew Clements, and he wrote a book called, well, one of them is called, the one that I was thinking of is called No Talking, and it is about a group of kids who make a pact to see how long they can go without talking. It's kind of like a boys against girls thing. So it is a great book. I like that.
And the kids liked it when you read it to them.
Yes.
Jan Bombeck, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jan Bombeck used to be a school librarian in the Shawnee Mission District, and now we want to hear about your favorite books set in school, whether it's fiction, where the school hallways and lunchrooms and classrooms figure prominently in the characters' lives, or nonfiction about education. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. We're back, and the bibliophiles are here on KCUR's Central Standard. You can join them with books set in school, 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us. We are at KCURCST. I'm Gina Kaufman, joined by two of our usuals, Katie Stover and Mark Luce. Katie's with us from the Kansas City Public Library, and Mark is here from the Barstow School, where he is a teacher. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Mark, I am guessing that this topic is near and dear to you as a teacher?
You know, in a weird way, no.
Okay. Go on.
I live it. I don't necessarily want to read about it. Okay. I think when I was younger, and before I was teaching, that there was a sort of an appeal both to the high school book. Like if you're in high school and reading a book about high school, if you're in junior high reading a book about high school, or if you're in college reading about grad school, or academic send-ups of the institutions, then that's great. Now I have a little more of a...
Can't we go to a fantasy world kind of thing?
Yes. Yeah. It hits a little too close to home.
Gotcha. We also have a visiting bibliophile this morning, someone else whose literary orbit very much revolves around the school setting. Adib Karam is a local author of young adult fiction. His acclaimed first book is called Darius the Great Is Not Okay. Adib, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
When you think about the school setting as a writer and as someone who talks about writing with other authors of young adult fiction across the country, what do you think it's important for the rest of us to consider about this place, what it means, and how it functions in a story about kids?
I think what I'm finding more and more is that my own memories of school are so vastly different from what young people are going through today that if I don't talk to young people and if I don't observe and if I don't learn, everything I produce is going to be terribly out of date. And yet there are still some constants. And perhaps the greatest, most grateful constant of school is that it does eventually end. because for me, like high school...
Unless you're Mark.
That's fair. But at least now you're coming at it from a different angle. But being a student in middle school and high school, for me, were very painful years, but they did thankfully come to an end. And I learned a lot about myself in those years, and then eventually in college, and now as an adult. And now that I'm in my 30s, I may soon have things figured out. We'll see.
Adib, when you talk to, so you talk to both young people about their experiences in school, and you talk to other authors who are probably reliving their memories in some way. And do you find that that is fodder for like really interesting conversations of like, oh, whoa, that's how you experienced it coming from your vantage point?
It is really fascinating to see how different people experienced school, both growing up in different parts of the country. You know, people who live in New York had a very different public school experience than I did here in Kansas City. Same with people in California. I got to visit a school in California recently, and it was like an open campus.
And wait, what do you mean open campus?
Like literally it was like five different buildings.
Oh, gotcha.
All scattered around this big quad with a swimming pool. And I was like,
a swimming pool.
You just have like a swimming pool in the middle of your school. And they just like wandered back and forth. Their lockers were outdoors. And I was like, what?
Why are you not trapped?
I was so confused. No, I thought, but like, you know, if you stick a locker outdoors in Kansas City, it's going to get frozen shut. It's going to get rained inside. It's like, it's a nightmare. So it was a very like weird experience, just sort of like the physical space of high school.
Yeah, you think of that as sort of set in stone, but it's not. That's just your experience.
Really, it is. And I think especially now that I get to talk to authors who did not grow up in the United States and learn about their school experiences, it's so vastly different. And it's really kind of opened my eyes to how kind of singular and omnipresent the sort of Midwestern version of school is in television. Because like growing up when I'd watch like shows about high school on TV, they all kind of looked like mine. But that's not really the case for most people.
So, Katie, when you think about, Adib just mentioned that there are some constants despite the changes in school. There are some constants that people tend to share. How do you think that some of those constants function when you think about literature set in school? You have some real thoughts about this as a recurring setting in literature.
Yes, because while Mark may not want to read about it, there are lots of folks out there who do, as evidenced by the quick search I did in the library's catalog. And I see an awful lot of memoirs from teachers. So there's a lot of those books about teachers. And I see books about students who succeed. Those are wonderful nonfiction stories people like. And then there's a lot of books that just fall into the school is hard camp of fiction. But I think people like to read about school, particularly high school, because that's where we first experience that microcosm of society. This is where, and the guys are nodding, this is where we all start to learn to socialize. We see differences in our friends, our peers. We see differences economically. We see racial differences. And this is where we start to manage those differences and meet people with experiences so vastly different from our own. We also start to encounter authority figures who are not our parents, who may or may not like us because they don't have to. And that's really hard for us as teens, as students, when you have a teacher that doesn't like you. All of us can talk about that, and it's a little traumatizing. So we're dealing with authority, we're dealing with friendship, and we're dealing with society in a very small scale. And thankfully, it's very contained. I think I used the term womb with a view.
I think, yeah, like just classic microcosm, really.
Yes, it's a classic microcosm. So that's why people are still fascinated with stories set in school settings. They want to know, was this like my experience, as Adib mentioned? Is this different from my experience? I think what most readers discover when they, whatever type of book they pick up, what they discover is that, yes, there's some connection to be made.
And there is this whole, I mean, you could call it a subgenre of this point of nonfiction involving journalists basically embedded in classrooms, giving the rest of us the scoop on what it's really like.
Oh, yes.
It's the old Cameron Crowe Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
And so, like, for you, Mark, I mean, is that an eye-rolly thing or like a...
Yeah, well, I still love Fast Times at Ridgemont High. There are parts of it that are very cringy. I don't know. I think there are times, like I remember Teacher Man by, was that Frank McCourt or is it his brother?
That was the brother.
Like that was a pretty good, I think it's one of those things where it's like, I can read a little bit about other people's sort of like, hey, here are the sort of things that I've learned via teaching, but I'm always on guard of like the lecture. You don't want to be like the lecturing sort of school guy.
Yeah.
But I will push back slightly. Your teacher did not like you. They don't have time nor energy not to like you. That's the self-centered teen who always like, he hates me. It's like, no, I don't.
I definitely had a teacher who hated me. Definitely, for sure. But we can discuss that off the air. Okay. Totally sure. For sure, sure.
Did he hate you in a Tracy Flick kind of way?
No, I was bad at the subject she taught. But I don't think that's why. I don't know why. You'd have to ask her. But anyway.
I love those embedded journalists in high school books, but I've always been askance whenever I read them because you never know how accurate that journalist is being. How are they really connecting with the other students? Are the students on to the journalist? Usually they are. And there have been a couple. I didn't list too many of them, Gina, but I think I've read almost every one. And I think, yes, this is cool. Things haven't changed. And then I think maybe you haven't quite gotten it because it's really hard for you to masquerade as a high school senior anymore. Students are on to you.
After Columbine, there were a few of those where somebody spent a year. I remember one in particular spent a year in a Minneapolis high school. And you kept asking yourself sort of the same question. It's like, well, who are you talking to? You know, it's kind of like the Truman Capote. It's like who gets treated well and who gets treated poorly. And in Cold Blood, depends on whether they talk to him or not. And so you see these kind of things where it's like there's a part of me that's sort of always skeptical of an adult embedding in
this kid's world.
What are they trying to relive?
Call 816
235-2888
with your favorite book set in school. Let's jump in now and get some recommendations. Adib, start us off with a couple of kids' books set in school, picture books. You brought in a couple of those.
I did. My two recommendations that I'm still really loving, the first is The Day You Begin by Jacqueline Woodson, illustrated by Rafael Lopez. It's about a little girl who's beginning at school and worried that she's going to be different from her classmates. And it's about how, as you begin to learn more about the people around you, you open up your heart and you get to connect more.
What is the name and author of that book again?
Jacqueline Woodson is the author. She's a National Book Award winner and ambassador for young people's literature.
And she came to town not too long ago.
She was actually here for the Lit Up Fest. And then illustrated by Rafael Lopez.
And then what is your other picture book recommendation?
My other one is this lighthearted book called We Don't Eat Our Classmates, which is about a young pink Tyrannosaurus Rex who is also just starting school and thinks that the way she's supposed to make friends is by eating her classmates and keeps getting in trouble for it because the rest of her classmates are human children. And it's just really funny and sweet, and she ends up learning how to make friends. It's darling, and I love it.
I mean, one of the early, early dramas in school is learning how to relate to other kids.
It really is.
By not biting.
A very specific
also
detail.
True.
That book is charming. I'm so glad you brought that one.
I love it.
Mark, let's move into, say, like junior high, early high school. You brought in a classic, A Separate Piece.
Yes. So A Separate Piece, it used to get taught all the time in high schools, and I think increasingly it's not being taught as much. Catcher is still sort of being
taught. Catcher in the Rye.
Which
teacher shorthand for Catcher in the Rye.
I'm sorry. Catcher in the Rye is still being taught, although I wonder if it's starting to outlive its vibrancy. Or its ability to connect with the kids. And it's sort of a school book. Like, it's kind of an anti-school book. A Separate Piece is by John Knowles, and it takes place at a private high school, which is basically Phillips Exeter. And it's a story of a young man named Gene, who's kind of an introvert, and this sort of larger-than-life friend, Phineas. And Phineas is really good at sports, and he's really smart. And Gene is really smart, but not so good at sports. And they have a friendship, but also Jean kind of turns it into a rivalry. And then there's this incident on this tree, and Phineas falls and breaks his leg. And the question is whether or not Jean, when he jumped on the tree, was trying to make him fall. And so, and it's also set around World War II, and kids trying to make the decision of whether or not to enlist.
Thinking about questions of morality.
Yeah, I read it when I was, I would say, I read it when I was in high school, and then probably read it again in my early 20s. And I found it, I liked it. Like, I really enjoyed the book, and I think it's sort of genuinely moving. But I do think it's a young person's, I think it's a young person's book.
You know, KCUR's own Brian Ellison also remembers this book fondly, in part because of the depiction of a close friendship, which at the age when he read it was like something that, and I think a lot of us can relate to this around middle school, kids are very isolated for all the acting they can do kind of around sure. how cliquish they are. There's also a lot of isolation. And so it was something to strive for, this kind of friendship, maybe minus the tree climbing.
Yes, probably don't want to go climb in a tree with Jean. That would be probably good advice.
Have you taught this book? Have you seen how kids respond to it?
I don't think I've ever. No, I've never taught it. I've considered it a couple times, and I usually sort of punt because I feel like they've probably already read something like this before.
So then another one on your list, and this one has seen some controversy, The Chocolate Wars.
This is one of my, this is, I vividly remember going into the Roosevelt Lincoln Junior High Library when I was in seventh grade. And I was, you know, you're a wide-eyed, I'm scared of being at school because everybody seems so old and so big and mean. And I just found this book and it just kind of spoke to me in a way. And so I took it home and started reading it and was just absolutely floored that these things could be talked about in a teenage book. You know, there's a gang basically that kind of runs the school, and they ask the new boy not to sell chocolates because they have an annual chocolate sale as a fundraiser. And so he doesn't at first, and he takes all kinds of flack, and then they tell him, okay, you need to start selling chocolates now, and he doesn't. And so it becomes one kid sort of standing up to all of these bullies. And so, you know, the school administrators look bad. The bully kids look bad. The kid who's not selling isn't necessarily a hero. There's physical altercations. There's sexuality. I mean, it's really kind of everything that you could hope for in a novel.
Unless
frankly,
you're a parent, in which case that's terrifying.
But I would also contend that to parents, it's like, wouldn't you rather have your kid looking at a book than either watching it on TV or living it in real life? I mean,
it's, like imagining kids in these situations.
Yes. So it absolutely floored me, and it opened. I just didn't know that books could do that. And as a, you know, what are you, 12 or 13 years old, and you don't know anything, and it's like, oh, wow, he gets it. And I just thought that was so cool.
So feeling gotten by an adult who's the author.
Yeah. And I didn't know that could happen, which is pretty awesome.
So that's The Chocolate Wars. And this is a very well-known book. Katie,
it's a classic.
Talk to me about Testimony by Anita Shreve.
This book takes place in a boarding school. And I picked this one up because I didn't think it was typical of Anita Shreve's work. But what's striking about it is that it's an early book about a sex scandal happening in a high school. And I can't remember the year on this one. I just remember thinking, oh, this subject matter is really, really potent and gripping. And now we're seeing this sort of thing play out in schools a lot. And what's shocking is that the senior boys are with this freshman girl, and there's a viral video going around, and everyone's trying to determine who the boys are and was the girl on drugs, and everybody is doing something wrong in this book. So there's the teenagers, there's the parents, there's the teachers, there's the school administrators, and it's really rather thrilling. It's a page turner, and I give it to people that say, I loved Big Little Lies and Prep. Like, okay, well, then you'll probably like this one too. It's really hard for the reader to discern who are the villains and the victims in this work. You do get resolution at the end of it, but it's not what you think. And it's gripping to read now, considering what we think we know about these high school sex scandals that happen, and get different perspectives from the participants, from the observers, from parents. And it's moving. Testimony by Anita Shreve.
So one of my favorites when thinking about this theme of books set in school, at least the one that just jumped to my mind over the weekend, is a memoir by one of the Little Rock Nine. Her name is Carlotta Walls Lanier, and she was one of the nine students who attended a formerly white high school in Little Rock. And that was, you know, this step toward integrating schools with, quote, all deliberate speed. But putting yourself in the shoes of the person walking through those school doors, or not, depending on whether the National Guard was there preventing you from entering the building that day, is intense and, in many ways, a real affirmation of school from the point of view of someone who wants in. You know what I mean? That one really jumps to mind, but that's the role of school in any memoir. That's part of the formation of anyone.
Yeah, and that's the entry point for a lot of readers. So a lot of us probably can't. We want to read that memoir to see what her experience was like, and we know the other struggles she's going through. So for a student to integrate the high school, and she's
14 years old.
She's got to think about making friends. She's got to think about getting along with her teachers and the school load, and the simple things like where's the classroom? Where's the bathrooms? Where's the cafeteria? Where's my locker? Will I forget my locker combination? Just the general daily drama of high school running underneath this bigger drama in her memoir.
Well, one of the things that seems so interesting about that is when you think about, you know, when I tend to think about sort of school books, you're like Goodbye, Mr. Chips, or A Separate Piece, or Tobias Wolff, Old School. And it's all this like leafy kind of prep school, like, wasn't that great when we all sat around and
played frisbee, you know, on the quad.
Dryden. And the fact of the matter is that that's a very small percentage of people have that sort of experience. And so to me, something like that sounds far more intriguing than, you know, basically like old white dudes doing old white guy stuff.
You know, there's also, I mean, there's just this really memorable scene where she, in the school she had gone to before, they passed around a clipboard just asking students if they were interested in integrating their high school next year. And she signed up on the, I mean, it was as simple as that. She just signed up, not really, I mean, with about, you know, just sort of in a casual way, the way a 13-year-old might. And then what follows from there is just monumental in a way she could not have imagined when she signed that clipboard. It's a good book. Another one that comes to mind for me is Jhumpa Lahiri's The Namesake. In that one, there's a young boy born to parents from India, but born here in the United States, and he learns about American culture in school, which is also in part a process of becoming at least temporarily alienated from his families in some way.
I think I remember. I don't know that I've read this, but I think I remember the story. And doesn't he have
he switches
names and can't quite figure out which one he identifies more with?
I think that's a very powerful theme for so many of our young people today. More and more kids are children of diaspora, children of immigrant parents, and there is a lot of code switching that's involved in high school.
So, yes.
Adib, this does bring me to one of your recommendations. So you want to talk about race?
Yes. It's by Ijeoma Oluo. It's nonfiction. It's not really set in school, but I decided to take some liberties with the theme. I actually listened to it on audiobook. It's read by Bonnie Turpin, who is a phenomenal narrator as well. But
Katie's freaking out right now.
It's so good. And it lays out kind of what the questions that we are facing, whether you're a person of color or a white person that wants to dismantle systemic racism. And it kind of walks you through the kind of conversations you can have. And I think about teachers in the classroom who are having to face sometimes entrenched white supremacy in the body of literature that they're required to teach for state testing, or whether parents who are parents of children of color who are possibly facing some well-meaning white nonsense in schools. And it just lays out really beautifully and evidence-based how you can tackle these things in effective ways.
So instructions for people dealing with conversations about race, perhaps dealing with those conversations in a school setting.
Correct.
What do you like about the content itself? Like, as you have read it, the book and like some of the pointers themselves?
For me, it was, one, it really makes you sit with your discomfort about the subject, because it is an uncomfortable subject for many of us. And it's almost, it's not scripted, but it's almost a way of practicing having these conversations, because I do find the more often you practice, the easier it becomes. And it also really brought me face to face with my own kind of areas of ignorance where I wasn't realizing where I was privileged.
Adeeb Karam, Mark Luce, Katie Stover, hang out with me through a break. KCUR's Central Standard will be right back, and you still have a tiny little bit of time left to join the conversation, but do it now. We're recommending books about school or set in school, whichever you like, whether they're picture books, novels for teens, or think pieces for adults wanting to better understand school today. 816-235-2888. Stay with us. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and you can call 816-235-2888 to join the Bibliophiles for a conversation about books set in school this back-to-school season. 816-235-2888. I'm sitting in the studio with Katie Stover of the Kansas City Public Library, Mark Luce of Barstow School, and Adeeb Karam, author of a young adult novel called Darius the Great Is Not Okay. They will be taking your calls. Hi again, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Katie, tell me about Our Boys and Drama High, these two that you say fit together.
They do fit together. They fall into the students who succeed subgenre I was talking about a little bit. And Drama High is it is the story of Glee. if you're a Gleek, then you will like this book. And it's really the story of education in a part of America that has been left behind. And
what do you mean?
Bruce Springsteen Rust Belt town where the economy is tanking in Pennsylvania. But this school has a strong theater program, and it's strong because of Lou Volpe. He had an over 40-year career at this high school as their drama teacher, and he has transformed the lives of hundreds of students. And the person that writes this book, Michael Sokolov, is a graduate of the school, and he performed in one of Volpe's plays. And this is a school that's in a pretty conservative part of Pennsylvania. This is where Broadway companies try out high school versions of their plays, like Les Mis and Spring Awakenings and really tough plays. And Volpe is a wonderful lab for that. So while this book is about how the arts thrive in a place where you would not expect them to thrive, and you would expect the focus to be on more hands-on subject matter, it's about where how the arts thrive and how they do elevate other subjects in high school. It's also about this man's dedication to pushing his student actors hard. And for most of them, being in this production is transformative. A lot of them go on to careers in the theater arts, but all of them will take what they learn in the theater arts and take it to higher levels in the professions that they choose.
That sounds really good.
And then Our Boys I brought because that one's got local ties. Joe Drape was from Kansas City. He's a Kansas City native and award-winning sports writer. He writes for the New York Times. But he moved his family to Smith Center to experience a season with the Smith Center Redmen. At the time he wrote this book.
And that's a town in Kansas?
Town in Kansas, Smith Center, Kansas. So Kansans who are listening know about this football team. They had won 67 games in a row. That was the nation's longest running high school winning streak. Now, I know it's been broken since then, and I think it was broken while Joe was writing this book. but he wanted to move his family to this tiny town, an experience they'd never had before, and see what is it about this football team, what is it about the town that makes these boys in this sport such an inspiration for the townsfolk and even for people who live hundreds of miles away. So he tells stories about the coaches and the players and the parents. And this is a community fighting so hard to hold on to a way of life that's really that's disintegrating as much as the town life in Drama High. But even as the economic fortunes decline in Smith Center, the folks are holding on to their values and their sense of community.
You know, Katie, Ava in KCK just called. She wasn't able to stay on the line, but she wanted to say that she has teens trying to be a part of sports and encountering race issues as part of that. And I'm sorry that she's not on the line to explain more what she means by that, but what can she wants to know if there are books that might be helpful to her as a parent thinking about this. Is the book you just talked about an example or no?
Our Boys would certainly be one I would give to her students. I would also consider And Still We Rise, The Trials and Triumphs of 12 Gifted Inner City High School Students by Miles Corwin. This one is a wonderful book about racism in schools and how these kids are working so hard to live the tough lives outside of school and continue to go to school.
Adib, any thoughts from you on that?
Ooh, no, now I'm put on the spot. I'm like completely blanking. I was like, I know 12 books about that and all gone.
Well, if you feel like tweeting them later, we are at KCURCSD and people can follow that thread. And if any of our listeners have ideas for Ava, Ava, if you're listening, perhaps some of our listeners will share ideas. So, Katie, on the flip side of what you were just talking about, like these two books set in high schools, I feel like the flip side is a book called The Admissions.
That one I could not get my hands on. That one is checked out with someone, and I put that on the list hoping I would have that one over the weekend. And I could not get that one to read really quickly.
So this is, though, about the stress of high school.
Oh, yes. So I know about this. This book is a little more pop fiction, and it's about the stress these parents go through with as their older daughter is applying for Harvard, the father's alma mater. And the mother is a high-powered real estate agent, and she's trying so hard to get her daughter to focus on her college application, except that the daughter has just discovered boys in her senior year, and the father has some kind of secret in his school past that he doesn't want to come to light, and the mom is focusing so hard on her older child that she is neglecting her middle and her youngest, who are also struggling in school. So the admissions is not just the college admissions process. The admissions is also the secrets that this family is harboring.
Ooh, and they may end up having to admit.
Yes.
So, Adib, the upside of stress is related, though, when we think about what students might be stressed out about, whether it's college admissions or something else.
Indeed. It's a book by Kelly McGonigal, and it really kind of encompasses a body of modern research on human stress. And the main thesis of the book is really that how we choose to view the stress in our lives really shapes the way we respond to it. If we look at it as giving us energy to help overcome challenges, that can have a more positive impact than if we see it as something that's bogging us down.
So you're recommending this for high school students?
I am. It's for me, it was a little academic at times, and I feel like when she does talk about students, she mostly talks about college students, but I was extremely stressed out as a high school student. And even if you just go through the exercises in the book and kind of ignore some of the more esoteric stuff, I think it's really worthwhile.
So then, okay.
Ooh, and I did think of one racism in high school book.
Okay.
Sarah Farazan's Here to Stay, which is about an Iranian-American athlete who plays on his high school's basketball team, and then some racist imagery makes its way around the school, and he has to confront that.
I read that book. It's fantastic. It's a perfect fit for Ava.
Okay, awesome. Ava, I hope you're still listening. Mark, you have included Sanctuary and Lolita, calling them, quote, outliers. I'll say they're outliers.
So I would put those in the same category that I would put Election. They are books about school, but not in sort of the way that you would think. Lolita is, or what were the two? I'm sorry.
Sanctuary and Lolita.
Yeah. So Lolita is a high school freshman who has an affair with a much, much older man, right? And she gets her education kind of in a different way, but then comes back to school where she's mentored by Cleric Quilty. Temple Drake is a student at the University of Mississippi.
This is Sanctuary?
This is Sanctuary by William Faulkner. And she falls in with a kind of a very rough crowd. So to me, those are sort of the like outsiders preying upon vulnerable female students. And Election is kind of the same way, because in that one, a lot of people have probably seen the film. It's a novel by Tom Parada first, and there's a young woman named Tracy Flick who is very ambitious and vivacious. She makes cupcakes for everybody, and she's running for class president and wants to win. Her history teacher, Mr. McAllister, finds out that she had had an affair with one of his colleagues, and his colleague had gotten fired. And so he hates her and wants to do everything he can to keep Tracy Flick from winning.
And don't you just want to say to these grown-ups, grow up?
Well, that's kind of what you want to say to the with the sort of admissions things. It's like, this isn't about you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about the kids. And so in one of the things I think in school books, it's like you think about The Prime and Miss Jean Brody or stuff. There's in some of them all have this kind of sexual content or sexual underpinning that, you know, as a teacher, you're like, nope, like I don't want that can go somewhere else. So I think Sanctuary, Lolita, Election, Prime and Miss Jean Brody, all of those are about school, but they're about other stuff kind of as well.
Yeah, and it just occurred to me that Little Fires Everywhere, which is such a popular book right now, is in some ways many of the dramas that play out without the parents, just with the kids, are at school.
Yeah, you know, I actually looked at that on the bookshelf the other day and thought like, oh, maybe this would work. But then I thought of these other ones kind of instead. But it definitely has that high school, you know, trying to move around the social hierarchy and who's in and who's not in and who you hang out with.
Katie, you have a whole section of recommendations filed under From the Teacher's Perspective. What is your top pick from that category?
The top one I would ask folks to have a look at is What Teachers Make by Taylor Molly. You might remember the viral slam poem that he did in, I think it was 2006. And it started making the rounds again in 2012. Just go check it out on YouTube. But he's a teacher. He's a teacher's advocate. And he just has a wonderfully passionate response to a man at a dinner party who asked him what kind of salary teachers make after the lawyer denigrates Taylor's profession. And this is a wonderful story of why teachers go into teaching and how silly the phrase, if you can do, if you can't teach, really is. And if you can teach, you should teach. So that's the top one.
Adib, I'm going to jump in. And we haven't even heard a young adult recommendation from you, and you are our resident young adult author. What are you recommending from the YA shelf?
I am really excited about a book that comes out later this month. It's called How to Be Remy Cameron by Julian Winters. I want to say it releases September 24th, but
soon.
I bet Google can correct me if I'm wrong. And I picked this for school because it's toward the end of the school year, and it's about a gay black adopted teenager named Remy who's adopted by a white family, and he's getting ready for college. He's working on his admissions essay, and his teacher gives him an assignment to write an essay about who he is. And he like is completely flummoxed at having to put down who he is on paper. And I think that was so perfectly captures that sense of being a teenager when, to me, that's when you have this like overwhelming opportunity and it's hard to squish yourself into one box.
What's the name of the title of the book and the author again?
It is How to Be Remy Cameron by Julian Winters.
And that's coming out soon. Before we go, I need to say that there's this series about a boy who gets into magic school. That was a note sent to me in response to an all-staff email asking for recommendations sent by my producer, Melody Rowell. But we do have a lot of staff recommendations. I'll tweet those out later today since we didn't get to them. Our time is up. The bibliophiles have been our regulars, Katie Stover and Mark Luce. Thank you both, as always.
Thank you.
And special guest, bibliophile Adib Karam. He's a young adult lit sensation living here in Kansas City. His debut novel is Darius the Great Is Not Okay. You can hear previous interviews with him about that book. They're archived at kcur.org/centralstandard. Adib, thanks for sitting in with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's a wrap. We'll get back to you tomorrow with a conversation with a guy bringing the Gay Softball World Series to Kansas City. He's from here originally, and he has quite a story. That's tomorrow at 10. Central Standard is produced by Melody Rowell with Ann Kniggendorf. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.